Hello, welcome back to the Bitter Jurors. We are a queer Survivor superfan podcast covering the fantastic season so far of Survivor 45. We did lose a diva, boots down, diva down, boots medic, whatever. I don't have any medics with me to revive Kelly, sadly, but I do have my co-hosts, Derek Reining and Sam Stanish. How are we doing?
When the medic is done with Kelly, they can go over to me. Need to be resuscitated, boots.
I feel like we're all familiar with that sort of like malaise that falls over like any like watching situation, whenever like you can just feel a girly is about to go, just like the mood shift downward is palpable. That's how it felt this episode.
But we have someone else to join us in mourning the loss of Kelly to discuss the interesting changes to the auction, Jeff with a knife. I'm so excited. Have we had someone from an international franchise of Survivor on the podcast before?
No.
Great. So. We have the first non-US Survivor contestant. If you listen to this summer on Stanima, my other podcast I done, The Bitter Jurors, you probably heard me mention I was watching Survivor Quebec. It was a lot of episodes. I watched it all the way through, and I got to be treated to the fantastic story of this underdog winner, first person idled out of the show in a surprise double tribal, Redemption Island returnee, incredible final tribal council performance, and winner of Survivor Quebec season one. We are joined by Nicolas Brunet.
Thank you. Good morning. Bonjour, hi.
Now this podcast is half Montreal, which is very exciting.
Totally. I'm so happy I'm bringing international flavor, and to be the first one to do that, that's amazing.
I know. I feel like we will, Christy Bennett, I'm sure, is one of our many white whales, would love to have the diva on at any point.
Yeah, some diva from Australian Survivor. I did post, like, guess who, we have our first international Survivor contestant, guess who it is? Everyone's like, Pia Miranda. It's like, okay, I love the way you dream. maybe one day we'll have Pia Miranda. But I was so excited, Nicolas, when you were down to come on, because we are a queer Survivor superfan podcast, and you are to be like, we had Jam win Survivor 44, and then you win Survivor Quebec right after that. It was so exciting.
Gabler winning Survivor 43 right before.
Oh God! Don't bring that up, Nicolas' face.
Anyway.
I wanted to ask you, since a lot of people probably didn't get to watch Survivor Quebec because it's in French, and not everyone who listens to our podcast speaks French. Nico, can you talk a bit about your history with Survivor, how you got into it, and just a bit about, you know, what made you want to go on Survivor Quebec? Did you ever consider going on U.S. Survivor when they opened up Canadians? You know, whatever you want to talk about before we jump into the episode.
Totally. So super fan. Been a while since my early teenage years. I've been watching Survivor. The easy way to say it is that I didn't have a lot of relationships and friends in high school, and online communities is where I found Survivor and other shows. But Survivor was one of them. That's where I made my first like groups of friends, communities. I'm sure maybe some of you or someone listening might have a similar introduction to the worlds of reality TV. So that's how I began with Survivor. I started watching in the mid-30s season, early 30s, but I rewatched a lot of seasons after. I also played some Instagram Survivor games where I'd play as Survivor people against people online. So my participation on Survivor was actually like my fourth time winning Survivor. Yes, when applications for US opened, I applied instantly. I still remember I was in university, and it got announced, and I had to sit down in a chair, and my feet were shaking. That's like the memory that I have. And when Survivor Quebec happened, I just knew that it was the thing I had to be on. It felt like a dream come true. It was awesome. I applied, got on the first season, and my adventure was amazing.
When you play on Instagram, who would you play as?
Ooh, so I have one that's like embarrassing now because of things that have came out later. So I used to play a lot of Joe Anglim because I thought he was pretty, but I don't follow him too much today. I also played a lot of, I struggle with the last name, but I'm sure you'll know who I mean by only the first name, Andrea.
Oh yeah, and I never know how to say her last name.
Belky?
Okay, Stan. Belky.
I think it's
Belky. Well, that's simple. Okay. I used to play a lot of Andrea, you know, like short, skinny, blonde, I felt like I could reach that a little bit. She works in TV. I wanted to work in TV. So I had like a personal connection with her somehow.
You're the Andrea Belkey of Quebec.
Sure.
Except T1.
Except T1. If she slayed.
Andrea Belkey, if she slayed.
Yes, you're here to translate the French. I'm here to translate the last names of Midwesterners.
Let's do that.
So what are you thinking of Survivor 45?
So I'm going to give a response that probably everyone is saying at this point. Just the longer episodes makes it so much easier to fall in love with the characters. And that's what I watch a lot of reality TV for. I mean, I love the game, love the strategizing, but at the end of the day, you want to get attached to the people you're watching. And I think this season has been really successful at that. Obviously, the two quits are always going to be a little bit of a pain in my heart to like completely appreciate and celebrate the season. Like, I don't know if I'd ever recommend it to someone as a first season just because that happened twice. But if we're forgetting about that, I think the characters are interesting. I love how they're presenting them. And I think we have a good variety of archetypes in the show right now. So I enjoyed it.
I agree. I'm loving it being long, and I love how much they're explaining about what's going on the show. Like, this Blindside, it just feels like there are so many seasons of the show that have happened since the 20s and the 30s, where like this huge blindside would happen, and it was this like crazy shock boot like to the viewers because there was nothing set up about like this even happening. But I loved in this episode specifically, and I feel like it's been happening all season, they like explain why the people that they're voting for are being voted out. And so going into the vote, whether it's Kelly, whether it's Jake, we understand why either of those plans went through because we already know, and we don't have to wait until the next week for the people to explain what actually happened.
Yeah, I don't understand why they ever thought that was like good storytelling to be like a flashback, because it's like the net like airtime is the same. It's you're just choosing to like move this segment from one episode to another. Like I don't get it. So I'm glad, like you said, Sam, they aren't doing that anymore. And this boot made perfect sense, even though emotionally it made zero sense to me, you know?
No, I know. I am glad that I'm in my boyfriend's parents' house, because otherwise I'd be like screaming.
Nicole, were you a Kelly diva? I know she was one of our Tumblr girlies, apparently.
Of course. No, Kelly was one of my favorites, absolutely. She was never in that favorite spot because it hasn't held by the same person since the beginning, but she has climbed through the ranks throughout the season. I think she was really, really interesting in the confessionals. I like how she approached the game. I was really hoping to see more of her getting to play the middle that she set up for herself. She had relationships on both sides of what's starting to happen. What it's starting to look like is a Reba dominance. So maybe she didn't have relationships on that side, but it was so teased to us that she was in the middle and she's going to have to make a decision. And I kind of feel like heartbroken that we didn't get to see that, because I do trust like she would have made the right decision and would have been a good contender for this game, because she had pretty good reads on pretty much everything so far until this. And even this, she kind of saw it coming in a way that she was like, if they wanted to go for Bruce and they're scared that Jake is an idol, it's going to come back to me. So she even had a read on her own potential elimination, which is pretty difficult to do when it is a blindside. Most people go home not knowing that it's them. And though she did not know that it was her, she heavily considered it and talked about it. So she should have listened to her gut, but still a strong and interesting player that I'm going to miss.
Who's the number one favorite since the beginning? You teased us.
It's a really boring answer. It's the same for everybody. Emily.
Yes, oh, you're an Emily girly.
I think Emily, first of all, has a really good read on the game. I like players who are able to very easily explain in their confessionals who's with who, what's my approach, why is this better, why is this not. Those kind of players reach me totally. And then I kind of love that she has a little bit of an antagonist side while being like a hero for the story. She reminds me in the Marvel movies, like an anti-hero, but like the way she's talking and presenting herself, it's almost like she should be a villain, but she's not. So she's like the Loki of Survivor. And I Loki, like L-O-K-I, not Loki, you know, like, so yeah.
But she's Loki, the Loki of Survivor.
But yeah, I find her super. entertaining. And just, I think she's had a really interesting arc throughout this game so far, losing everything in the beginning, surviving so many tribal councils. And she's not just surviving, like, she's doing good moves. Like, when she saved Caleb, that was great. When she was in the middle playing with Austin and Drew on one side, and Kendra and Brando on the other, I think she was managing those relationships really well to ensure that it wasn't her. I also think that she's super underestimated in like her, how good she's doing at the game right now. And if she makes it to the end, to me, there's no way she's not a great final tribal performer. She's so well-spoken and has such a great understanding of the game that I think if she makes it there, she's super dangerous.
Yeah, I feel like any sort of like abrasiveness that she may have, I feel like it's just going to be charming at that point. And I mean, the fact that anyone would allow her to get to the end, like, would, I feel like, just kind of be an insta win for her in a lot of ways. Like, I feel like how people would say, like, I don't know, like, if you let like a Sandra get to the end in Game Changers or whatever, like, you're just like handing the win over. Okay. I don't know.
I think Emily's great. I do not think that she's an automatic winner contender.
Well, I'm just, from like a narrative, like, why would you let someone with that narrative make it to the end? I'm not saying
because she's abrasive and is bad at making connections with other people.
She's serving.
Well, as we've seen, you can like tickle people's feet with palm fronds while they sleep, and you can still be considered the best, like, socially at the end of the game. So I think Emily would have a great shot. I'm just saying.
Totally. And I think you just said a really interesting point to me, that she's really bad at making social connections with people, because a lot of people are describing Emily as someone they can trust super easily, right? Like, I think Drew has talked about that. Caleb has talked about that. That's still two people who are vocalizing that, hey, my relationship with Emily feels real. I like it. I want to move forward with it. That's hard to do in Survivor. Have someone like give you complete trust and appreciation. Maybe she doesn't have strong relationships with everyone, but at the end of the day, if she makes it to the end, she needs strong relationships with half that jury to win. Mm-hmm. So I think she's good at not making relationships with everyone, but making really great relationships with key people.
The Erica of it all.
Yeah.
That's true. Totally.
I see it for her.
I agree. I agree that you don't need relationships with everyone. And Caleb, even a couple episodes ago, was like, it's not about the quantity of relationships, it's about the quality of relationships. And I do definitely think that Emily is good at like making her allies believe in her. Even Kelly was very surprised that Emily had betrayed her when Kelly was on her way out. And so, like, I'm not saying it's like impossible for her, and I do not think that she is the worst person at Survivor who's still in the game. But we, you know, this is all Edric related too, and we could talk about it later, but I support her and would not be surprised if she is the winner of the season. I guess I would just be a little bored by it if it were to happen.
Which is so weird to think about, like, where we were, like, season, like, week two.
Yeah.
Like, an Emily win would be so predictable and boring. But, I mean, I guess edgically it would be, because she's kind of spotless. But we'll get there, like you said. Yeah.
Before we move on from like the whole Emily discussion, what do we think? Because there's been a lot of discussion about Emily's decision to sell out the Women's Alliance. Mm. And I know emotionally we're sad about it, but I feel like some people are letting their emotions cloud like the gameplay of it all. And like, it's just like, Kelly was a big important player in the season. She was a quote unquote big threat. And Emily like didn't have really strong relationships with all these women. Her strong relationships, Nico, like you said, were with Austin and Drew. And so I don't, like, again, it's sad she did it, but like, I don't think it's fair the way I've seen some people kind of frame it, as like a bad decision, as like Emily like making her into a villain, which is like, you know, obviously we're rooting for the women. I don't want to speak for everyone, but I speak for myself. But it just felt to me like the more logical move for her to like stick with the people who have already like stuck their neck out for her. Because it's like, what's going to happen if all the women go to the end? Okay, Emily doesn't really have super strong connections with any of them. She's sent, you know, sending out people in the game who could help her if she turns on Drew in Austin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like, and I think Kelly said this in Exit Press, like the Women's Alliance was just like not really a thing ever, which is like heartbreaking to hear. You never want to hear like this was just never going to happen. But yeah, I think if people come away from this episode like, oh my God, Emily sold out all the women, it's like, I think you are just kind of not really looking at the show critically. You're kind of just accepting whatever the show is like presenting to you, which is, as we all know, almost never true.
Yeah, I mean, there was no reason to go for it in the first place at all, since she and the Reba girls would be like, just like the Bellow girls, if the Girls Alliance were to take over, there's three Bellow girls who have been together the entire game. There's no reason for Emily, Dee, and Julie to get in with that. But especially when Bruce publicly loses his vote and you only even need five people to have a majority in this vote, like, they are already in a five-person alliance, so there's no reason, there's absolutely no reason to flip to a six-person alliance where you have less power.
I mean, I will say, like, I didn't think it was ever going to happen. I think it was just teased to us, but I too always root for the woman when I'm watching Survivor. Not always, but honestly, like 90% of the time, even during my own season when I was on Redemption, there were four women left and two men. And that's something that my Redemption buddy and I like discussed at one point, like, hey, what if this is a Women's Alliance? And I was like, oh, I still want it to be that. that I could come back in the game and just get out by them. So I would love to see the return, like a strong, powerful Women's Alliance that just dominates everything. I think it's really cool. But saying that this was a bad move for Emily is just plain wrong to me. She doesn't have as strong relationships with those women than she has with probably the two men that would be targeted first if they were to actually do that. Because I think on the men's side right now, if they were to really look at it, I'm pretty sure they would have seen Drew as the potentially biggest threat like strategically, and Austin is the biggest threat physically. So if they're going to really go for this Women's Alliance, they would have had to go for her two closest allies. And I say that lightly. I'm not entirely sure who she's the most close to right now. But I don't think it would have made sense for her, but it did kind of suck.
No. Yeah. And I of course, all of our tweets after it happened were probably like along the lines of, this is breaking my heart. Worst move ever. Yeah. Like whatever. It doesn't matter. But that's just easier to make funny. Like, it's just objectively, it's, of course we could be like, well, objectively, strategically, but that's not really who we are. So it was never gonna be that. And you know, we support Emily making the best move for her game. It's just, you know, the worst move for me personally.
Yes.
And as a TV show, I should be entertained. That's the number one thing that should happen. And you know, this you know, tugged at my heartstrings, but what I called entertaining, no.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I wasn't wowed.
Oh, yep. Sorry. I'm so sorry. No. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to make a weird Jake reference. Whoa, wow, whatever.
Oh, yeah. He did that twice in this episode. When the auction was announced or when they were coming, he was like, whoa. And then at the end. I'm surprised that the Rebas seem like they are really like going to win out. I mean, obviously it's anything could happen from here on, but like at this point in this show, I just never would have expected the Reba people to still be around. When they were coming together, it just felt like they were not it. Like, I don't know why. I just felt like in the premiere and in the first couple episodes, I was like not believing that they were gonna be like the people, and now they are in the majority and they're just like gonna keep going, it seems.
Yeah, it's confusing. You brought this up, Nico, of like Drew and Austin sort of threat level. I really can't gauge if people see them as threats. I feel like especially Austin, I'm kind of surprised that no one is gunning him for him, at least as far as we've seen. Like, I don't think his name's even like come up as an option yet, which obviously is a testament to his great relationship with Dee and Julie and Drew and Emily. But it's like the Bellows, it's like there's, it's just not even a thought on their mind. Like, oh, Austin, is someone we should watch out for. Maybe he's just like playing really low key out there. I don't know. It's weird.
I mean, Jake did mention when he was trying to like split the votes with Keturah that apparently like he's playing scared. Obviously, that's not something we saw yet. But if he's saying that in the confessionals and confidently going into a plan on which he's relying on Austin playing scared, that means that there's a certain level of gameplay that like Jake has noticed from Austin. So it's very possible that he's playing extremely low key. Do I think that makes him less of a threat? Absolutely not. He has a bunch of advantages, great relationships. He's really likable. He can win challenges. He's physically very capable. I don't understand why he's not being considered right now. Maybe he's being kept as some sort of shield and we haven't heard it yet. But even then, to me, there's still like a lot of shields in the game. Like a lot of people that you can target that people are recognizing as someone you don't want to bring to the end. I will say there's some people that are being talked about as don't want to bring them to the end that I don't understand. And I tease
like for, Bruce.
Yeah, what? That's weird to me. And I know the edit is trying to make the audience dislike Bruce. I mean, that's right. He's getting a lot of negative airtime, but so beyond that, like the audience feeling that we're getting, if you're looking at the game, not a lot of people seem to like Bruce. So why is he seen as a threat to win? Like people aren't gonna vote for someone at the end that they don't like because he got booted for his last season for hitting his head. Like to me, that's not enough of an impactful story to be like, oh, we can't bring him. He'll say that and win. That's like a non-argument. Anyways.
Yeah. It seems like people want him out because he's impossible to work with, or like impossible to like redirect, more so than they're worried about him winning. I think they all probably recognize that he can't win, or that's what they think. But I feel like people are more like, I need to take him out so that I can maybe start working with other people. Bruce seems very locked in on whoever he has. And so if he sees people talking to people outside of the alliance, he gets easily very spooked on that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that side is the reason why they want to take him out. But I'm pretty sure it's Kelly that said in a confessional at one point, like, oh, no one wants to bring Bruce to the end because we'd have a chance. Like that was mentioned. And she wasn't only speaking personally. Like she said, like, we don't want to bring. So that means like a few people talked about it. I think that the fact that he returned after what happened last season is kind of amplifying the storytelling aspect of why people are scared of him in the end. But even then, in the way that like he communicates around camp, I think there's an argument to be made that when you're living with someone 24/7, you can kind of figure out if they'd be good at Final Tribal or not. And maybe that's just, maybe that's something that I just got because I had the opportunity to play, but you can kind of get when someone like is a good communicator, has an understanding of their game. And from what we've seen, he seems pretty clumsy around camp, even in the way that he talks to people. So I just don't see him as a Final Tribal threat at all.
Anyways. Yeah, I wonder if maybe that's like, I don't know, they did just see Gabler win, so maybe there's like some fear of like, maybe we all think he's annoying, but that doesn't mean that people aren't going to vote for him, which I understand that fear very much. But like you said, I feel like, what would his story be? I guess his story would be everyone wanted him out, but he still stayed in. I don't know. It kind of reminds me a lot of Ty, how like in Koh Rong, everyone was so scared of getting to the end with Ty, and then he ends with zero votes. Like there's just something I think when you're out there, and obviously you can speak to that more than I can, but it's just like there's that bubble, and then it's kind of like the whatever's going on at the jury is just like totally not like anything you could ever guess. So I think now after in a post Gabler world, there's maybe more like fear of the presumed goat who actually is not a goat at all.
I think that's a great point actually. And that's something that I discussed with Jean Thomas, who's one of the producers for our show. And he said that in Survivor, he's a firm believer of recency bias. So what you just talked about is exactly that. Maybe people are associating Bruce to Gabler, which I kind of understand. They do have some similar personality traits and styles of gameplay. I don't think they're similar, that similar, but no. There's some points that I understand why people thinking of Gabler would compare him to Bruce before, for example, Jake. Like I understand. So if they're going to associate it to the winner that they saw most recently and associate that threat to him, I think that's a really good argument that I didn't think about. So You're right.
Thank you. That's all I ever want to hear from anyone.
Bruce is kind of like a combination between Jam Jam and Gabler. He's kind of like, he's got the wacky side.
The girlfriend side.
Curmudgeonly. Yeah. He said girlfriend that one time.
This is probably Bruce. Pretty thin, but Bruce plays a lot like JJ.
That's what I was thinking. Okay, I didn't want to mention, bring that up in case that was like a bad read, but I was just thinking of, yeah, like for context, Derek, Sam, and everyone listening, there's a guy on Survivor Quebec named Jean Junia, great name. and he, which he's kind of, he's in his like 40s, right? He's like an older guy. Yeah. Yeah. And he, I mean, Nuka, you can kind of speak to what it was like to live with him, but he was a big presence. And people, he like spearheaded the majority alliance that pagonged most of the merge, and then after Nico got back in the game, they took him out in a really great vote. But he's someone who like people might have been talking about like taking to the end or not. I don't know, Nico, if you can speak more to that.
Yeah, oh, totally, because he, I mean, he was like the great guru of our season. He controlled a great majority of the season. I like to say that he played as a leader not because of his charisma, though he is a charismatic person, but he kind of played Survivor like a mafia boss, where he'd have his alliance and you listen to him and you do what you do. And if you're talking to the enemy, you're in trouble. And as soon as someone from inside his alliance would start making plans elsewhere, no matter who the target was at that time, if you betrayed him, you're now his main target. So he kind of installed like a climate of fear where if you went against him, you're the next to go, which to me is amazing gameplay. He played really well and almost won. But you're totally right that we still don't know to this day if he makes it to the end, does he win, despite the fact that he controlled everything because he rubbed so many people the wrong way in doing so. So I think that's what Bruce kind of doing right now, where he's stopping people from talking to person X and Y. He's hyping up his own game a lot. So there is a comparison to be made there. And in both cases, I don't know what it looks like if they make it to the end.
Mm-hmm.
Jean Jouger, I love that. It's not, no relation to Jean Robert, right?
No relation to Jean Robert. Jean Junior.
I'm like, that's how French names work, right? You're just kind of related if you have Jean in it, you know?
So we've talked a lot about Bruce and the vote of it all, but the big event of the episode that was hyped up so much is the return of the auction. And Nico, I know you just missed out on the auction on your season.
You
just gone to Redemption Island, so you didn't get to participate. But what do we think of what they did here in these twists and the changes they made?
Nico, you first.
Yeah.
So, first of all, I'm very happy that the auction is back. It's a great challenge. Reward. I think it's super fun to look at. And please don't underestimate how good it feels to receive that food. I thought people were exaggerating looking at those plates of food until you've experienced it. Like Emily falling on the floor for that charcuterie board, I was like, that's correct. That makes sense. That's valid. So it's amazing to be able to reward these players. In addition to the fact that they have even less food than Survivor season elsewhere, like they don't even get a bag of rice, which is crazy to me. But moving on, I think the return of the auction is really cool, and I really like the twist that they brought with it, that you have to find your own money. I think it rewards players in a similar way that if you were going to do a challenge and win that challenge, get a better reward. Now the challenge was to go get your money, and then you can bid on items and had more leeway to do so. And the twist to spend your money so that you don't lose your vote if you have the highest money at the end, I think is really cool and is going to stop people from saving all their money just to get an advantage at the end or take that risk. I think it adds like a little bit of spice to the whole betting thing. I want to hear your thoughts about the auction, but then I have one more thing to say about this specific auction.
Okay, we'll tune back in a second.
Yeah.
I don't hate what they did here. I think they need to kind of tweak it a bit because I think there's just like something they need to figure out, because I think having we've talked about it. I don't like how often they have people lose votes on the show. Like we saw in the preview for next week, apparently like three people are going to lose their vote. Or like, I don't know, maybe that's Jeff because it could be maybe Jeff is trying to trick us with the preview, but there's just like a lot of losing votes. And so if that wasn't going on outside of this, if this was like the only way a vote was lost this season, I'd be like more on board, because I do think it adds like an interesting dynamic. But then it adds a dynamic of everyone just bids the max on things as when we get to a certain point. And so it takes away like the bidding aspect, really, of like going back and forth and like, how much money do you have? Okay, we want to get this. So I think they just need to figure out like having that like risk with it, not just like completely like divulging into, everyone's just going to bid the max because they don't want to lose their vote. So I think there's something there that they need to tweak a bit, because it just, in the second half of the auction, it just became, I have the most money, so I'm getting this next thing.
I think there's three things at play and they need to remove one of them. And I feel like the problem could be mostly resolved. Like it's the combination of someone will lose their vote who has the most money, everybody having different amounts of money, and everybody knowing how much money everybody else has left and they know they have the most. So I feel like if you took out any one of those things, it would largely be removed. Like, obviously, if people weren't afraid of losing their votes, they wouldn't just all automatically vote. They would like give all their money away. If they all had the same amount of money, but the money was revealed, like, that's less good about just having it, because everybody would still just get rid of it because they're afraid of losing their votes. But if nobody knew how much money was left and they didn't know how much, if they didn't know they had the most amount of money, they wouldn't even know that they were supposed to be getting rid of all their money. So it's kind of like there's a bunch of different ways to try to get rid of this problem. But I feel like the most simple is just to have it be the regular auction. Like, I don't understand. The auction by itself is fun to watch and was for nearly 30 seasons of the show. And I feel like it always delivers. I feel like there's fun moments in every single time they've done the auction, and I don't understand the need to gamify it. I love the instinct to get rid of all the advantages. Like, that was definitely something that was hampering the auction as it was moving forward. But like, I just don't understand the need to, like, the lack of faith they have in this really fun idea that's worked flawlessly, like, so many times, to just like be good on its own. Cause we like, it's just fun to like, Emily dancing for the charcuterie board is a moment you could never, ever, ever compare with like someone getting an advantage or like working out strategically the best way to bet all their money. Like, it's just not fun at all compared to her, like, a plate of meat and cheese being revealed and her like nearly falling to the ground because she's like shaking her ass. Like, it's just never gonna be that.
I know, it's like, that's, people are gonna remember that. People are gonna remember Austin like chewing up a giant eyeball. It's like, no one's gonna remember, oh my god, Bruce like lost his vote at the end. Like, like, not the most exciting thing. I think I'm not like we said, I'm not mad at it. I feel like my issues were more with the presentation. I feel like the hunt for the money maybe lasted like 5 minutes too long. Like, I like the idea of like, yeah, maybe if everyone had like a flat amount and then you could like add more if you went out and found tubes, I would be cool with that. But I also just like didn't need to watch that for the first like 10 minutes of the episode. And every single like time Jeff would be like, this was not the final. I was just like, come on, let's just like speed this up. We don't need to do that. I almost feel like that aspect of it feels like the most extra to me, of like, you don't know how many items there will be. It's almost like maybe it should be like musical chairs. Like, there's 10 people left in the game, so there are 9 auction items, so not everyone's going to get something. I feel like that would encourage people to be more aggressive with the spending, with the bidding. I don't know. There's something to it.
I feel like then people would still just bet all their money because they don't want to be the person who doesn't get anything.
Yeah. I don't know. It's weird. Like you said, Sam, this worked just fine. I don't know why we needed to make all these changes, but it was still fun despite it, because the cast is fun.
Nico, what is the number one thing you would have bet all your money on in an auction?
And everything that was shown, or if I'm at an auction, would I?
Ooh, up to you. Yeah.
Like, what would be your trigger? Like, what would be the thing that you saw that you'd be like, I'm out. Like, I'm putting like it all in. Bar.
Like, if you can give me like a bunch of tortillas and chicken or beef and some vegetables and salsa and guac and sour cream, and I can make my own little fajitas. It's like an activity and food. So that would have been what it made me Ben. I don't think if I was ever on again and there was an auction. Oh, actually, I was going to say because of my playstyle, I wouldn't go for an advantage, but I can't play the same way the second time. Now I'm going off topic.
Now you think about it.
Sorry, you made me think of what happens if I go back. I agree with many of the points that you said about ways that could stop people from bidding all their money. I do agree that that was kind of boring, that we didn't get like fights for items because it was always just who had the most money got the next item. So I think my favorite idea you said is that they don't see the amounts that each other has. I think that's super cool. I think it makes it like a guessing game. And when people are betting, you have to figure out, okay, so that person bet that amount. So they at least have that amount. So how close is that to me? So I think that would be really interesting. I think both of you talked about like, do we really want to gamify another aspect of the game? I think the reason we disagree is just, I'm just so obsessed with games, board games. anything can be gamified, and I think I would be happy. My point earlier, you're actually going to hate it because you said this would be boring to watch, is that no, but it's true. When you said it, I was like, oh, that's going to be funny. My point was going to be, if I was there, I would have been much better than them at mathing, like how much I need to bet to make sure that I'm not in last place, especially if you had one of the higher amounts. Like, to me, the fact that D bet 900 on one item makes no sense. She had enough money to bid 450 twice and have two items. And I did the math quickly. And if she bet 500 on her first item, she would have had, you don't want to hear all of this. But what I'm saying is that there was a way to math it a lot better. So that was the frustrating point to me, that like, if they looked at the amounts properly, which they had access to all of the data right in front of them, they could have been a lot more strategic with how they spent their money to get more out of the challenge.
I was thinking about that too. Like, yeah, I think Austin had $700 and D had $900 or something. Maybe someone had $500. Anyway, other people are also trying to get rid of their money so that they're not the highest at the end. So she was pretty much guaranteed to get two items if she did like 460, 440, whatever. But, you know, she just wanted that milkshake, which I feel like with the candy bowl is not, I just don't think that's really going to serve you in your body after 16 days. But I understand it's a do or die / you know, you're very hungry and you want this comfort. But I feel like that would wreck me inside were I to have it after 2 weeks of no eating.
Yeah, that would be tough. And I feel like the alcohol, which is like, I would like go up for a marg, but it's also like, that's just like gonna dehydrate you even more. Like that's the fun of it. It's like, it's definitely not great, but it's so delicious. You can't help yourself.
I know. I was so mad we didn't get any drunk confessionals from people, or like,
I know.
Like, or that we didn't know that people were like really drunk or whatever. I think that's very fun. I mean, if you're dehydrated or you haven't eaten anything in the day you drank, it really takes over your system. And so after 2 weeks of like no eating or drinking anything, they must have been going wild, right?
I would hope so. It makes me sad that we were deprived of it. But they also, like, same with the merch. Didn't they have, they had alcohol at the merch feast. We still didn't get any, like, really outlandish Debbie Wander level, you know, tirades from anyone.
Maybe it's for the best.
Maybe it's actually, like, the network or the format that is stopping a little bit. Because I talked about this to the producers of Sorority Quebec, where, hey, for the merch next year, you should totally have alcohol. Because we didn't have any, and I was kind of expecting it because I thought it was funny. And so I asked, like, why don't you bring it back? It usually creates like really good TV moments that people get a little bit of drunk at the merge feast. And it was explained to me that basically, like, since they're looking to create like a family show, showcasing like 5 minutes of someone getting super drunk is not necessarily what they're going for. But I'm not a family. I'm a 27-year-old that wants to watch someone get drunk and spill way too much information.
Instead, you guys got the KFC sponsorship.
Ooh,
Yeah, our merge was literally KFC. We had chicken, we had fries, and then we had plates with fruit, vegetables, and pistachios. So that was my merge feast.
Mm.
Yes, the US merch feasts are cooler. I will say it.
Wait, is it called KFC in Canada? Or what,
Nico, if you wanna...
It's called PFK.
Yeah, it's PFK.
Yeah, so Poulet Free Kentucky. That's the international flavor we were talking about earlier.
Exactly. Mm.
I love that so much.
Chicken fried Kentucky.
Yep, exactly.
You're telling me a chicken fried this Kentucky?
Oh my god.
the auction and what Kendra got, she got a beer and some other stuff. Not she said this is for my dad, and we learned about her backstory about being raised by her adopted father, and she didn't know for some amount of time that he wasn't her real dad or her biological dad. And like when she was 18, they reconnected, and now they have a really good relationship.
That was so cute, and she was such an adorable child. I was like, oh, little Kendra, like, looks exactly the same. It's like, that was really cute.
Yeah, that was nice. That's like the great part of these longer episodes. We're getting these little story moments that I enjoy a lot. Kendra is also one of my favorites, so I'm happy that she got that. I think it was really fun to watch. I might be like completely wrong here, but am I the only one who thought that storytelling was like missing bits? Okay, let me explain why.
Like, because Kendra's story?
Kendra's story. The way she was saying it, the impression I got as a viewer is that there was like drama with her mother and the father who raised her, because they weren't like acknowledged at all. It was just like my biological father was hidden from me until I was 18, and I found him, and now we have a great relationship. And it almost, I don't know, and it might be me just thinking too much, but I feel like from the editor's point of view, I feel like there could have been a little nod to mom and dad who raised her, because it's almost like they were put aside for the story. So
it was like they were focused on biological dad, but then it was like her, I don't know, like maybe that's all she gave them. I'm not sure, but that's what I feel like these the fatal flaw of these like flashback packages is that they purport to like give you a fuller picture of these people, but they really just feel like one like specific like honed in sort of like issue or trauma that a person has had. They remind me of like the Drag Race mirror talks in that way, where it's like, I don't feel like I'm getting to know you better, I just like know something like terrible that happened in your past, which is like still part of who you are, but it's like I feel like I know Kendra more having seen her like refuse to eat a worm. Like that told me more about Kendra than her personal backstory, which I'm glad she got to share. And there's just the flashbacks. I don't think they're ever really going to work for me that much. But you know, cute baby photos. Love that.
Nico, I definitely understand the strangeness of the way that the confessional is put together, but like I do think that it's tough to really know what the situation is without like Kendra like elaborating more on it. I think that ultimately what the show was trying to say was just about her biological dad, and just being like, this is the heartwarming story about how she reconnected with her father. We cannot say whether it has something to do with her mother or if it's like completely unrelated and it's like literally just a segment about her dad.
No, I mean, you're totally right in the way that like, say she would have gotten that and been like, oh, my dog loves pretzels, and the segment would have been about pretzels, I probably would have thought about, oh, why didn't she mention her parents? So that's what I'm saying. I might be just completely wrong here, but I just remember that was my impression in the moment, that I was like, is there drama? And there's missing pieces.
Gay instinct to look for drama wherever it may be.
I'm not saying Kendra's mother did anything wrong.
Why are you coming for Kendra's mom?
But I am questioning it.
I am just wondering if she did.
So we're a few votes into this merge, and it's day 15 at this point of the auction. Nico, do you remember what was going on at day 15 of Survivor Quebec? Because I want to give people an impression of how long that season was.
Okay, so my season, my final tribal council was on day 44. So when you tell me that they are literally past the halfway point of this game on day 15, it's crazy to me, because day 15 on my season, and I remember it specifically because I'm pretty sure it was Valentine's Day, which was a big day for me. I cried a lot. But if you look at that episode, my hair is still super short. I'm still trying to like figure out my way in the game. There's like 6 twists to come. I'm still not that hungry. All is doing well. So it's crazy to me that they're on day 15 and they're 9 days away from the end of this game. That's my one thing, or one of the things about the new era that I don't love, the 26-day format, because I don't think it gives these players' minds time to break. You start to kind of lose it and make bad decisions later in the game when you're more exhausted, hungrier. I think they make up for it a little bit by giving them literally less than the bare minimum. So it does play on your mental a little bit, but like the fact that when you reach day 10, you just have to be like, oh, I just have to last another 2 weeks, where in my case, it was more than a month. I'm not saying, ooh, my life is hard, but I'm saying that's for me, that there's like a missing piece there.
It's just so much easier to conceptualize that you can make it to the end. Like 39 days is one, just so random of a number, but it's also like over a month of doing it. 26 days, that's like so short comparatively, even though it's, sure, it's just 2/3 and it's still like over 3 weeks. But like you said, if you make it 4 days into the game, you're kind of like, oh, it's just another like 3 weeks of this, like whatever. And now here we're at the merge, day 15, it's like 11 more days. You've already done it. It's not as daunting at all. And I'd love to be here being like, it doesn't change the product at all. Like as a viewer, like it doesn't matter, but it does. And I do think that it
100%
just like, affects, it definitely affects the game. I think there's no question about that. But I do think that we do see a shift in just like, yeah, like you're saying, people breaking, you know, which is questionable ethically to use as entertainment, of course, but you know, they're signing up for it. And I think that ultimately it was fine for a very long time. And I do think we will never return to it in American Survivor, but I think we are losing something by not returning to it.
Literally. It's very sad. I think to me, the biggest issue with it is the lack of time between votes, like we've talked about. It's just like, there's less time to come up with a screwy new plan or for some other plan to like fall apart. Like, it's like, I like, what would happen here if we just had like an extra 24 hours for like, maybe Kelly would have sniffed out that something was going wrong. Maybe it would have, like, the plan would have slipped. Like, there's just like a lot more that can happen in that time span. Yeah, makes me sad. I hope that one day we can get back to that. I don't know. I feel like I'm like those people who are like, we have to get back into the office, but after COVID. But in this very specific situation, yes, we do need to go back to the pre-COVID days.
There's absolutely no denying that with more time, plans change. I mean, I can give you many examples in my seasons that I know about that, oh, if this vote had happened the day after, this person would have left instead. So it completely changes the game and completely changes your perspective. Another like quick nugget of conversation that I could add is my merge was day 23. Mm-hmm. we were 3 days away from when American seasons end. So it's huge, that the difference in amount of time. And you're totally right. Like there's so many instances, especially this season, that I think that if players would have had a little bit more time, the outcome would have been different.
Yeah,
sad. But yeah, these players wanted to take out Bruce. Ultimately, he won immunity. Plans have to change. And I do think that was very fun. Even though, you know, it would have been so gratifying for him to go home and sort of like, it's been all been leading to this moment. But I do love when the like agreed upon target wins immunity. And then everything has to change. Kendra says, Bruce won, horrible thing. Kelly's pissed. And like, they're all just scrambling, trying to figure out what to do next. And I love the scene where Kelly and Emily are trying to get Jake to say a name.
Yeah. That was so, my favorite thing was Kelly being like, you really do not have to play your shot in the dark. Like, it's like, why did you bring that up?
Like we really need so your vote funny. If we're going to do something. So don't play your shot in the dark.
Now that you say it, that's the one moment I was watching the episode with my partner. And I went like, I feel like that's one of the first instances of just bad gameplay by Kelly. I feel like that was such a weird thing to say. You don't feel compelled to work with someone who is telling you to play or not play an advantage. Like, why is this coming into play? If we're going to play with each other and trust each other, like, my vote and what we're saying is all that should matter. So I thought that was a really weird thing to say. Love Kelly, but I thought that was strange.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it was just like a whatever, like an instant thing, but it just, yeah, like you said, is weird. Didn't really like do anything. And also just, it is kind of weird for them to like corner Jake and be like, give us a name and we won't give you a name.
That was not great.
I kind of love it, but it's like not a good idea to I like shove him into the lockers and be like, give us a name.
I know, but I love this scene because Emily and Kelly go up to Jake and they're like, so are you thinking of anything? And Jake's like, I don't know. Are you thinking about anything? And Emily's like, we were thinking of something. And Kelly's like, what are you thinking, Jake? And Jake's like, you guys were saying you were thinking of something, so you tell me. All I understand. Excellent.
Those moments are so uncomfortable though. Like when you are talking to someone that clearly does not want to work with you and you're both trying to just feel each other out, it's you almost want to kind of break out of the game and be like, are we really doing this? We are not going to work together. Let's just go talk to other people. Obviously you can't do that because you have to pretend kumbaya with everyone so they don't vote for you. But in that instance, like I totally get why Jake, like when they leave, you see him look at the camera and just like get the biggest eye roll. And I was like, he's correct to give that eye roll. Like they're just wasting his time and he knows it. And they know that he probably knows. So it's like, ugh, like what was that?
They're just toying with him, which I love.
he said, not me, love that. Because they're like, I'm not voting for you.
Who, me?
And ultimately, Emily and Drew, and mainly Drew, are talking, come up with this plan. Instead of Jake, we could vote Kelly instead. And just like, since they have five people and there's only going to be nine votes, they have the power to decide between voting out this like agreed upon vote or do something surprising and vote out Kelly.
And they vote out Kelly.
Sad.
Tragic. Yeah. Oh, Drew, this was, you know, strike number 11 for me with Drew. Like, what are you doing? Stop it. I loved D being like, I don't want to do this. My queen.
That was my favorite part of that scene, because Drew was like, I do think that we need to vote out Kelly. It's got to be her tonight. And then D's like, I don't know, I'm not 100% on this. And then instantly Drew was like, now I don't know which one is right. Like D was like, I don't know. And now Drew's like, I don't know.
Yeah, obviously something changed. Like, I'm really hoping, because this vote ultimately came out, it's like, okay, we saw this being set up, I understand why Kelly went, but I'm hoping we get next episode to hear from D, because it seems like she was the main person holding this up and ultimately flipped. I mean, she was never like truly with Kelly, so it's gonna be interesting to see, because like there's just been like, it's Reba ended up being a lot more interesting than we thought they would be, with, because now we have the D Julie duo and then the Austin Drew duo with Emily as their number three, and so it's clearly D and Julie like ceded to what they wanted, but like I'm just curious to see what is their plan moving forward, because now Austin, they don't know, I don't know if they know Austin has a second idol. They know he at least has one idol. There was like not a lot made of the fact like if Kelly goes, Austin gets idol number two, and I'm just gonna be curious. I'm sure he's told Drew knows about that. Emily might know.
A couple of episodes ago, Austin, I think, was saying that everybody knows about the amulets, and so I think that that's everyone knows he has an idol. I'm not sure. I really like the Reba Alliance much more than I would have expected to at when they formed. Like, I think that they're really fun. I like all the characters, and if it is a final five of the Reba Four and Emily, like, that's fun. That's fine.
Sign me up. I'm down. Yeah, I don't know like you said, it was the amulets were public knowledge. But like who remembers what the fucking amulet even is?
It's an idol at this point.
I will say, like, as soon as that amulet twist was revealed, there was no way to keep that secret. Impossible. There are three people that are not aligned that need to make their own people happy. By sharing what their amulet is, it's also helping them because it amplifies the power of theirs if they eliminate the other two. And they're also putting targets on two other people and putting themselves out there a little bit. But you know that at least one of those two other people is going to tell one person. And information about your amulet cannot reach your ally before you tell them. So that's why it's impossible to keep that amulet a secret. It makes sense to me that everyone knew about it. Now, is it weird that this episode, the fact that Kelly going gave Austin a second idol, ever come up? No. Is that super weird? Absolutely. I think it kind of says a little bit of a something about Austin's edit, but I know we're talking about that later. Mm-hmm. So it is weird that wasn't like a factor that was discussed. And am I correct in assuming? No, never mind. I thought that what's her name? Jemaya and Kelly went back to back, but there was someone in the middle, so never mind.
Yeah, Caleb and Sifu were back to were in there, but yeah, no, I mean, I think that might have just been too much of a hint at what they would ultimately decide to do, because if they give a confessional where Austin is like, well, we could vote out Jake or we could vote out Kelly and I'd have a full immunity idol, it's sort of like, I wonder which one he's gonna go with. I do think that the opening confessional next week is gonna be like, my sandwich revenge is complete. I have a hidden immunity idol. Like, take that, Kelly and Jemaya. That's what you get for not letting me eat sandwiches 3 days ago. Like, that sort of thing.
Yeah, 100%. And then he can leave, I guess. I don't know. Like, what else is going on with Austin besides that? Couldn't tell you.
Yeah. Me either. I thought that Jake did a really good job at obviously tribal doesn't mean anything, but I do think Jake was speaking well at tribal, where he was like, if you're all voting for me, someone is making the wrong decision. Like, it's kind of like a lot of people say this kind of stuff when they're on the bottom, but like, use me or you cannot all get to the end together, so why are you voting all together as one person? It doesn't make any sense. But then I feel like he was not able to use staying as a way to like get a foothold in the game, because he didn't vote with anybody. He just used a shot in the dark and wasn't like proving to anybody that he could like be trusted or anything like that. But maybe the Rebas didn't tell him that Kelly was going. He seemed very surprised.
Mm-hmm. I don't think he knew. I think he was kept out of the loop on that. Because if they were to tell him, that does open the door for him to spread that information and hit on them. I mean, Kelly and Jake do have a relationship. They were on Bella together. So I think that's why it didn't get out to him. I will say I was kind of impressed, and usually this always makes me cringe, but him accidentally saying if I play my idol and then switching to an idol, something like that. Usually those moments I think are really poorly acted and have absolutely no impact. This is one of the rare occasions where the way he said it almost convinced me as well. And I thought it was a pretty interesting thing to bring up, because if they were unsure of their plan, obviously at this point the plan was Kelly, so it didn't matter at all. But if they were unsure of their plan, could that little moment make them panic and start like a live tribal? Maybe. I thought it was well executed.
I agree. It's much better than it usually is. He did a good job. He's an actor. He's a lawyer.
I loved Katura though, like clocking it when she was like right after she was like, yeah, I guess like that could scare people. Like she like never buys anything Jake says. It like cracks me the fuck up. I love Katura so much.
No, but I also love when she goes, she was talking to everyone and she goes something like, but you know, we all know he's a lawyer. And she's sitting there, a lawyer. That was epic. I love that.
Queen.
Jake's getting in, he has this like dynamic relationships with both other lawyers and he doesn't know either of them are lawyers. Like the first scene we saw was him and Julie talking, and I think that she's hiding she's a lawyer, but they are fighting now and Katura is like on the opposite side.
It's amazing. No, I love it.
It's funny, and I think it was a weird choice for him not to lie about his profession, but I'm assuming that was discussed much earlier in this podcast, so we won't go back into that. But it is funny that there's two lawyers targeting the other lawyer and using the fact that he's a lawyer against him. It's funny.
It's weird that he wouldn't go like, I'm in local theater productions.
It's totally believable. Like if he's like, you know, I teach high school theater. Like I think everyone like, would believe that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But then you would be like, well, he's a good actor, and then very you wouldn't believe him when he says very loudly, "We have to look for rings, Bruce. My rings." Like you'd be like, oh, he's acting.
Then you'd kind of be like, well, then why did they put you in a suit? Ultimately, Kelly voted out. We get the biggest emotional reaction of the season so far. I felt like Caleb definitely had a very big one, too. We love that. I hope that it continues to be explosively people mad and shocked, openly not happy that they're going home for the rest of the season. Kelly turned to Austin and was like, did you do this? And Austin, like, nodded. It's so funny. Like, of course he did it. Like, it's funny as a viewer, like, we've never seen them even speak to one another. And now she's like, you? Even you?
I loved Bruce saying, we'll talk soon, as she walked away. It's like, why would you say that? That's so silly. Bruce is so funny. But yes, Kelly is 100% what everyone should do, which is like, the mood needs to go south quickly. Okay, like no, not good game. You guys are evil people. They're disgusting.
I want everyone to feel as bad as I do.
Even worse.
And Emily was like, "You played a great game," and Kelly was like, "You voted me out." She's like, she's so mad. I love it,
Nico. So you were the first person idled out of Survivor Quebec. Like, how was you going through your head? Because I feel like I remember people being just kind of like so excited that there was like shocked at what happened, especially since it was a surprise tribal right after the previous one. What was going through your head? I can't remember what your reaction was.
So I want to give the context for Sam and Derek. So we just merged, we have our feast, we have literally, and I'm not exaggerating, like 30 to 40 minutes of strategizing. We just merged, we feast, 30 to 40 minutes of strategizing. We get to tribal. I had a plan at the first tribal, obviously did not work. So one of my closest allies gets voted out. And then a second tribal is announced at the tribal. So we have a little quiz. Again, we had 30 to 40 minutes of strategizing. And at this second tribal, during the little challenge and the tribal, we're not allowed to speak at all. So votes are cast again. My other ally who is in trouble plays an immunity idol. The target that my ally and I had gone for also gets an immunity idol played for. So I get voted out on a second tribal council with two votes on me after two immunity idols have been played. So that was that. So
hell no. You should be comfortable knowing that, like, that is the most, like, not vote vote ever. Like, that's, like, a huge asterisk, I feel like. Is like, yes, I got voted out, but by, like, two people after two idols were played. Yeah, that's fucked up.
So I'm not mad at my elimination in the way that, like, redemption happened after, so I'm okay with it. And I do agree that circumstances were not in my favor. Obviously, I was not in a great position. I did get votes thrown my way as a backup, so I'm not saying that I was playing perfectly up until that point, but I agree that whole tribal was a mess, and it makes me mad to this day. But my reaction, I love it. I'm a very emotional person, so I get a little bit emotional. I'm really nice to my fellas, my friends. I say thank you for the great adventure. I'm like holding my heart, and then as I get up, I start laughing and I go, that was great, guys, but next time just not me, please. And then what's great is that I came back in the game and next time it was not me and I made it to the end. So it's great foreshadowing. But yeah, I just, because of how I am as a person, I wouldn't want that moment to turn into something negative. In that moment, since I thought it was the end, I wanted to be more of like a thankful recognition of the great adventure that I just embarked on. Obviously I'm heartbroken, but I still wanted it to be positive. But it is a funny clip, me exiting.
I'll have to look
Christine
it up.
Christine sent us a clip of you passing out during Final Tribal.
Oh yeah.
It was very fun too.
I love that moment. Yeah. I love that moment. Yeah, I get one vote to win. One vote. Collapse. So yeah, I'm so Stop happy me. That that's the clip that was shown to describe me as.
Yeah, you need to see this. I was like, I there's that. Like 87 episodes of this show. You just need to watch this like 2 minutes. It's like 60 something.
66 yeah. episodes for 44 days.
Yeah. Wow, that is insane.
But every week it's 4 episodes of. This is a format that's popular in Quebec. So every week there's 4 20-minute episodes during the week. And one 45-minute episode on the Sundays. So it's a format that a lot of our shows take. So that's what they redid for Survivor. But yes, it makes for a lot more content.
It was awesome in the pre-merge because it was like, you knew everyone. Like, that was what was really great. I think in the merge, it like slowed things down a lot. And that was just like, you still got to see a lot. But like, then the pre-merge was incredible because it was like, I knew where every single person stood. And so that's what we're kind of getting to see a bit more of what 90 Minutes does on a smaller scale. It's like, oh, we can spend time on things that don't necessarily pan out. And that's exactly what I loved about early on in Survivor Quebec. It's like, okay, I know exactly where everyone stands and we get to see all the KFC rewards.
Speaking of panning out, the Bello girlies still voted together at the end of the day, and that's all that matters.
Proud of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Powerful stuff. We never had to see them turn on each other, even though they for sure would have voted out Keturah. But we don't need to remember that part of the game.
It didn't come to that, so it doesn't matter.
Exactly. Not real.
Yeah, my final thought on the episode is Jeff Probst had a knife. It scared me. I was fearful for my life.
It was like, oh, Jesus Christ. Okay, that was a lot.
I thought that was a great addition. I don't think, race negotiations is stupid, but it was very funny and high octane to jab the knife through the rice bag.
It was evil. That's all that was. That was evil. It made me so upset. I think as a TV moment, the fact that it pressured them into stepping forward was kind of epic. But if you put yourself in the shoes of those very hungry Survivor players, seeing that huge hole in that rice bag broke my heart.
It was, and so like, but they end up getting all of the rice. Like, I was confused. No, like
they got as much as was left in the bag.
That's like,
put it in another basket.
Oh, I was like, because there were like baskets, and I was like, what the? I don't understand.
It was really chaotic. They didn't understand what was happening. It was super funny. I felt so bad from like, it was Keturah who ended up stepping down from the challenge once that happened, because it's just like,
yeah,
someone has to do it. It was funny, but I wonder how it's gonna, he can't really do, I mean, he could do it one more time because next season they won't have seen that. But then moving forward, people will know the knife is like the dagger behind his back, the smile on his face. People will know that's there. So it's, I really hope they do it again next season because it's just funny seeing the reaction. But I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if they continue to do it. Will that people just do it immediately? Or will there always be one person who has to like get, forced into it with the weapon?
If people know it's coming, maybe it's going to create something at camp where people are going to plan like, hey, if we get that option today, who's standing up? And then that could create for some really interesting moments where if someone said that they were going to stand up and then they don't do it. But I don't know if people are going to think that far into the preparation.
Well, I mean, it's like it's happening very consistently at 10. So hopefully people just like you said, just start to think about it before But that's easier said than, I guess, done in the moment. I don't know. But yeah, this was a fun episode. I hate to see Kelly leave, but loves to watch her go with so much anger in her heart, as she should.
Agreed. Nicola, do you have anything you want to plug before we talk about Edric?
Like personal projects?
Yeah,
like, where people can find you. Anything.
Oh, okay. Well, I was going to like share this with you three at the end. I mean, I already follow Christine, but I can be followed on Instagram at nicholas.survivorqc. So a lot of our comeback shows, we get like our custom handles during the season, and I kept it after, and I'm going to keep it for a little bit. So yeah, nicholas.survivorqc for Quebec. And then I have some cool projects that are coming. I definitely want to continue my relationship with reality TV, being on Survivor. And I'm not just saying participating, but my goal is to kind of go forward as like a pro on reality TV in Quebec. So I'm trying to talk about it, watch a bunch of it, and promote it. So if you want to hear about Quebec's reality TV, so Big Brother, Survivor, all those shows.
Traders Canada too.
Traders, well, Quebec's getting its own Traders.
Oh, wow.
Same host. It's a game. She's hosting both because
she's gotten the most out of this whole thing.
Yeah, I don't know if people like who don't live in Quebec understand like the Quebec reality TV ecosystem. Like it is there, you guys make so much reality TV, and it's like a very lucrative thing to be involved in because there's just a lot of it. There's a lot of interest in creating content for Quebec. So yeah, like if you're interested in like, I've learned a lot over the past year about like all this, like it's very interesting. So yeah, follow Nico to get all the updates and all that. And I'm very excited for the Traders Quebec. I think I'm hoping to see some Survivor Quebec people on there. Cause that would be, I have some thoughts on who I'd like to see. Nico included.
yeah, maybe we can talk about it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you can follow me. Speaking of, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at the X-Teen Files. You can read my writing on Inside Survivor, where Gia Worthy and I recap every episode of the season 45. And you can listen to me and Derek's other podcast that we don't do much with right now, The Shadow Play Gaze, a podcast about the anime revolutionary girl Utena. So I think that's everything for me.
Oh, yeah. You can follow me at RainDerix on Twitter. Follow us, Bitter Jurors Pod, Twitter, Instagram. Yeah, listen to Shadow Play Gaze. So fun, so fierce. Our Sailor Moon episode was really fun. We got to find some other cartoon lesbians to talk about. You know, we'll find them.
We can find
them. Waiting, I'm waiting for you guys to watch She-Ra. It hasn't happened yet. but you can follow me at Sam Sanish on Instagram and my other podcast, Buffy Boyfriends, on everywhere. We put the call out for more 5-star reviews, and we received them. Here's one from Josh Jones, 42069, who says, "Iconic, great podcast with amazing hosts and fun guests. Not afraid to ask the tough questions like, how did your game change for I'm gonna say the better when you joined the mafia with Matt and I?" Yeah, I will never be afraid to ask that question. The question of why, the question of life, why, how did your game change for the better, or I'm gonna say the better, when you join the mafia with Matt and I, it's impossible to answer. No one knows the answer. It truly bends the mind thinking about it.
It's really, it's thought-provoking, it's strange, it's Lynchian, it's surreal.
When will we get Bowie Jane on the pod? That's what I want to know.
Oh my.
She's a lot to say. Anyway.
A person I did not know was Australian until halfway through the season.
Nico, did you watch Big Brother? Are you Big Brother US girl?
Big Brother is a lot to follow, so I'm not like, I don't watch every single episode, but I'm definitely aware of
Bowie Jane. Okay.
The Spectre of Bowie Jane.
Edric, what do we think, girls? Obviously, Sam very safely jumped off of the Kelly train. I was about to crash.
Truly, I'm like, I feel like a cat with nine lives.
So where are we at now?
I feel like I texted you guys this before. This was a quiet episode for Dee, and it wasn't like amazing, but I still am like, not, there's nothing in her edit that scares me yet. Like, I, like we said, the Reba alliance is like clearly long for this game, and she is probably the most insulated of that four, it seems. So just from like a game logic perspective, it makes sense for Dee, but also I just feel like we get a lot of good stuff. I mean, we had Drew subtitled saying Dee is our winner. Like, that's pretty fantastic, I gotta say. But I also came out of this episode weirdly like intrigued by Keturah more. I mean, obviously I love Keturah as a character, but edit wise I think I also said this in text, but it's like it was concerning when Keturah's entire storyline was like fuck Bruce, but now that the whole season's storyline is fuck Bruce, I'm like, wait, maybe that's like her winner story, which is horrible and like straight up misogynist if that is her winner story is all about a man. But it's like, okay, so like maybe there's something to this. I don't know.
I love Keturah, obviously. That goes without saying, but I'm happy to say it. I would say, and this is not edgic, I guess, but is, maybe it's part of the logic part of it. But anyway, I just don't think she would have released that video of her talking for like 6 minutes about the Bruce her conflict if ultimately she wins. Like, I just don't, you know, I just think that if like it
but
turns
I also
out,
feel like...
I just think that if it turns out that she ultimately is the one who gets the better of him, I just don't think she would like be that forthcoming with the her thoughts on it, where she like, I feel like she'd be more like, well, I won,
I guess. Well, to me it's like, if you won and then you are watching the show and your entire winner story is about another person entirely, I would also be really angry. Like, I guess, like, I would prefer to be like I said, like Erica's quiet, like I'd rather like kind of be in the show than be in the show but as like someone who just like clearly just really hates someone. If I'm the winner, if I'm just like a character on the show, then I'm fine with that. But like, that would be pretty fucked up if that's like, really, I won the show and this is what you're showing of me. Like, it's so I really hope she wins, but I also don't hope she wins, because then I have a lot of questions for the editors.
Fair.
Yeah, I'm still on the D train. I just feel like we wouldn't be seeing this much of D and Julie's relationship if one of them did not make it to the end. And I feel like Dee, it's more likely to be the case because we've just heard a lot more about her. We've gotten personal content, which is a big red flag for me for Kelly, but she was just so about the game and it just was a little odd. So Dee just has like a little bit of everything. I am open to being surprised because we have been surprised. I'm really curious to see, we're not necessarily winner, how Jake does, because Jake could either be like Final Tribal Council, lovable Final Tribal Council loser, or like the underdog who like comes up just short and loses fire, or like the underdog who turns it around. I think that, I don't know if I see that for him, but Jake is someone I'm really watching now, like where his story goes. He could easily go out next episode, or he could very easily make it to the end. So he's someone who's emerged for me as like an interesting character. But other than that, I'm not willing to make many other like bold predictions. Other than that, I feel like Dee has a really good shot of winning at this point, both logically and editorially.
I support Dee truthism. I hope it's her. I agree. Jake is a very interesting character. I don't think that he has winner edit potential. I don't think is what you were saying in the first place, but there's all sorts of things wrong with his edit, I would say. But it's so confusing, like, because even if it is Dee, there's just still other people. It's all very muddled, which I think is very fun, and I do love the new era. It's unable to be predicted, basically. Sometimes it's easier, sometimes it's harder, but I think that it's fun that we're 4 weeks from the end and there's not really like a clear definitive person out in front, unless it is Emily, which we haven't really talked about yet right now. I said earlier, like, I just don't want it to be her, and I love her and I think she was really fun in the first episode. But if it is just gonna be 5 seasons in a row of somebody who spoke to Jeff on the mat on the first day of this of the epi- like the first episode premiere, they're on the mat talking, if it is her, like, it's just so boring to me that it, like, that's the determining factor for 5 seasons in a row. Why would they do that?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, an Emily win would be fun just like as like a thing, but it is, yeah, it would suck if, like you said, it's always Matt chat that determines the winner.
And I do think that her growth arc is not helpful for her as a, like, outside of that. Like, I just don't think that we're being told that she should win in the usual way that they edit, especially women, but Survivor winners in general. Like, she just had such a horrible first, like, couple episodes that we were reminded just like two episodes ago that she was bad at the beginning. So I just don't think that the growth is serving her. I think that people are very mad at her, and are, you know, I don't think it'll be her, but I'd support her if it is. Like, I'm trying not to be hating. I'm just speaking to what I believe.
No hate. There's no hate.
How about you, Nico? Where are you at?
Before I give my, can I be curious about something that Sam said? When you say people that are mad at her, are you referring to players or audience?
Players. I just think the way Kelly went out of the game, I just don't think that she's like thrilled about Emily. I think that she seemed very particularly angry with her specifically.
Okay. Can't wait to see how that turns out. So that's not how I interpreted it with Emily and Kelly. I actually thought her turning to her on her way out was a way of showing us that she had gotten close to her. So that's like another relationship that Kelly has. I think that new era Survivor players are mostly able to separate personal relationships from game. So I don't tend to take into account like huge, like, what's the word? Kaizo in English. I'm sorry. First time this is happening this episode.
Betrayals.
Betrayals. I don't think betrayals go over like personal relationships. So maybe they were trying to show us they had the relationship. So Emily's the really obvious choice here because of her screen time, her story, the fact that we know so much about her, and they've given us a relationship between Emily and basically all of our favorites that have went out the door. So we saw her getting a little bit close to Kelly, and now Kelly went. So if you liked Kelly, you can be like, oh, well, she was close to Emily. She was super close to Caleb, and we focused a lot on that relationship. So if you were close to Caleb, if you liked Caleb, now you can be like, oh, well, there's Emily left, who is a good friend of hers. So that's the obvious choice. I think Drew is interesting to me, and this is, you didn't mention him, so maybe that's just my less than average understanding of Edgic, but I think that we haven't had someone who has an antagonist edit win in a while. So even if we have like personal negative feelings towards certain players, they didn't have negative in their edits. I think Drew has a little bit of negative in his edit, while having some nice moments and obviously having a huge pull in the game right now. We're seeing a lot of how his strategy impacts the game. So that's why I think Drew is still an interesting person to look out for, because I don't think every winner has to have the beautiful story attached to it. Maybe he's just a regular guy who's really good at Survivor. That's kind of how I'm interpreting him. And then one thing that I would add to Keturah is in the pre-merge, we saw a lot of Keturah's understanding of the game and, oh, I'm sorry, my voice is cracked. Her understanding of the game and how she plans to approach the next phase strategically while not really having any strategic pull. So for me, anytime that someone has so much screen time on their strategy while it not actually having much effect, that's always like a green flag for, oh, the show wants us to think that she's strategic. So those are kind of the three points that I would add for the editing and how I'm interpreting it.
Yeah,
that makes sense to me.
I feel like Drew, I'm seeing him more and more. Every season recently, it seems like there's someone who needs to be the obstacle someone takes out to win. And weirdly, I could see that being Drew. Like, I always thought it was going to be Bruce, but I with everything being built up about Bruce, and then it's just nothing happened this episode because he won immunity, you know, this could come back, but it does seem more and more like Drew could also be that person of like, is, I'm not saying like I would am putting my money on Emily winning, but is Emily's winning move taking out Drew, or is that Dee's winning move taking out Drew? So I think like Drew is definitely being built up to be an important character narratively, but I'm not sold like on him winning, just because it does seem more like he's being built up as someone that they need to take out to make their win happen.
I also think that I tend to write people off very early in the season to my own detriment. Like, I feel like there were just certain things about the early episodes that I don't even remember what they were anymore that made me think it wasn't going to be him. And so I've stopped looking at him, and I feel like I should probably stop being that way. But that's part of why I probably didn't mention him at all, because in my mind I'm like, well, it's definitely not him, and I'm not even taking in new information, which is the wrong way to do this.
I get that. I feel like the early game is very telling, like you said, Nico, like the fact that Katura had such a strong start, despite maybe not being in the best actual position on her tribe, is great for her. I feel like with Drew, we just saw a lot of I'm just never gonna forget the episode where Austin had to save his game, basically. Like, Drew could not play the game without Austin, was kind of what the edit was telling us, which you could argue maybe Dom and Wendell's relationship was similarly symbiotic. They were still shown as individually good players. I guess the episode I'm referring to is when Austin was the infamous sandwich moment, right?
Yeah.
Yes, when Austin was away, Drew was almost got himself voted out over Brando in the pre-merge, and then Austin had to come back and be don't worry, guys, we're here. Yeah.
At least because when Emily was, it was framed as Emily being kind of convinced that Drew was stirring up trouble,
yes.
Brando lied about something, I can't remember, and yeah. Emily was I don't know if I trust Drew, and it was very much framed when Austin came back to camp that it was because Austin came back he was able to secure Emily's vote, and that that did not look great for Drew. But we've also had lots of to play the devil's advocate, I not putting my money on Drew, but we've had a lot of winners recently get portrayed as being very flawed. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on, is that is a narrative that Austin is really helping Drew's game. But that's with where we're at with the editing now, that's not enough, I think, to be it's not him, because every single winner in the new era has either been Erica invisible or very flawed in some way, or on a big character, and not necessarily portrayed as a perfect strategic player. Even Jam Jam had a great edit and a great story, but he had a lot of trouble in the pre-merge, almost got voted out. That's not necessarily, again, I don't think Drew's winning, but I don't think that's necessarily sorry, I don't mean to be fuck Drew, but I don't see it for him, but I don't think that's the reason why.
If ultimately the Reveal Four are the people who come to the end, though, it would be good. His edit is good. We saw them form basically from his point of view with Julie also, but it was mainly him. And so I think that's an interesting piece of the story on their side of things.
For that alliance. Yeah.
He and Austin were the superfluous to the four of them coming together, which you would think would maybe be framed in a different way if D were to win, but we have no idea.
Who can ever be sure?
We're always guessing. Nico, on your season, I convinced myself that Kimmy was the underrated, under the radar robbed goddess who was going to win it all, because she would always see, we got a confessional commenting on this vote. They showed her face when the JJ blindside happened. It was really focused on her. I was like, she's winning.
Mother.
You turned it on Final Tribal Council, and I was very excited. But that's just, it's so hard to fucking read the edit. Yeah, I'm still putting all my money on D at this point.
Yeah, I'm like you said, I'm on the D train, baby. I'm ready to ride this D to the end. It's happening.
My real prediction still stands with Emily, even though I didn't speak about it that much, just because it's just kind of obvious. I think it's really a combination for me of the editing and the logic, kind of what I said earlier about I do think she has a really good path to the end, and I think she would be a really good Final Tribal performer. So that's why the logic side for me with Emily is not to be.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I just think that she's going to be more of a Shan or Omer or Jesse, one of these people who falls just short. But I think that she's a great character, and I definitely would see it. I understand why she would win if she were to win.
Yeah, and it's, to be fair, if we're looking at the dragons to be slayed this season, they could be both Bruce and Drew, and she has from day one was had a feud with Bruce. I mean, that's kind of died down, but that could come back. And then Drew, that could be the person she portrays. To, you know, I do see the story beats are in place for her to, I think, have a winning narrative. She's just been a lot quieter in this merge than I expected, and that's a little odd. But that, again, if these next couple episodes are big episodes for her, I think that could be there. But there is that connection of both these two now big potential targets in the merge she has some sort of connection with, positively and negatively.
We always check in on her. She's always telling us why she's doing what she's doing and explaining her strategic decisions. She's definitely the main character. Would never argue against that. Mm-hmm.
Slay.
Period. Slay. Okay.
Et cetera. Every other gay word.
This was so fun.
Yes.
Slay.
Nico, thank you so much for coming on.
En français. How would you say that en français?
Slay.
C'est pas plaisant, mais c'est déjà venu.
Yes. Period. No, how do you say it? Oui. Yes, thank you so much, Nico, for joining us. This was so fun. I hope you had fun. You are part of our little winner circle that we've had on the pod, so you should be so proud. Yes.
No, thank you for having me. This is great. It's the first time I got to comment on Survivor 45 and any Survivor, because I wasn't a Survivor person before Survivor 45. But thank you so much for having me. I had a lot of fun, and you guys are great to chat with. And I sincerely want to hear your impressions going forward if you want to chat on Instagram.
Oh, yes. I will be.
I would love to. we'll see you all next week for another episode of 45. We only have like four left, something like that. That's a little kooky. See y'all next week.
Bye.